They asked me if I could paint the house where I lived as a child, if I could remember it, and I said yes. But paint it, I can't even draw, I said. Make anything. I said I painted a butterfly when I was a little boy in school, and they said do that then. So I began by pressing the point, which was finer than ours, but the moment I pressed the button the pen began to vibrate in my hand, and I heard a small sound, and felt a slight vibration. But the most surprising thing came the moment I began drawing the butterfly. It came out in relief and in exact colors. I stared, but how is this possible? And they laughed and explained, whatever you have your mind is captured and sketched exactly as you think it, in colors, and in exact scale and size. This apparatus captures exactly the vibration, the color, the size of what you think and produces it accurately. The apparatus receives the vital image and translates it then into a sketch. I was stupefied, and I then understood their interest in my pen, which looked similar. After that, on the 24th and 25th of December L974, they took me to an energy vortices in the Andes. I was Caracas attending a conference when they contacted and arranged a meeting. I boarded the spacecraft between two small villages near Caracas. One is called El Juiquito and the other, where many Germans live, is called Colonia Tiva. From there they took me to the Vortis 5 minutes. It was in the uplands of Peru, at 4,200 meters altitude, between Macuyuac and Machu Picchu. These beings have submarine bases in Lake Titicaca and under the seas. I was taken to one of the bases, the Mariana Trench. I am writing a science fiction story to be able to detail what is going on in the marine depths. By some manner I am going to give this information to the world, and I believe the time has come. I am going to make, together with others in Venezuela, kind of census of the public, of their opinions concerning flying saucers. If they accept them, we want to know why. If they do not accept them, we also want to know why. This will serve to measure the information that can be released of that which we have. Little by little we hope to give this information to the world, as much as it can accept, to prepare them for the day when they shall also experience the UFOs, hoping that they will not panic, and that they will be a little bit prepared for what will happen. One may look around and see that we have availed ourselves of little of the vast amount of knowledge and experience we could have enjoyed. Even this little was too much for many, and for most of the UFO clubs. Witness the treatment any contactee gets once he decides to reveal even a little of what is happening to him. He would be better off to have said nothing and to avail himself of these experiences in silence, which is exactly what most of them do after their first experience with the public. We may state that these experiences have gone on for years, and the descriptions and dialogue up to now would fill volumes. The undersea base in the Pacific alone would take a whole volume to describe. We have undertaken the task of translating Enrique Gastelo Rincon's full report on his contacts from the original Spanish to English for your enlightenment. Our working title for that report is UFO Contact from SHILLHO, the name which they called their home sun somewhere in what we call the Pleiades. El Toco, Venezuela during 1977 to 1979, before moving from Venezuela to Puerto Rico, Senora Monrosa Alvarado had a series of unique experiences as an observer in a local Venezuelan UFO group which was being contacted by UFOnauts who told the local contactee either that they came from the Pleiades. At that time Alvarado and his wife were living near Ciudad del Toco, Distrito Morán, Venezuela in a sugar cane growing district. Reports of strange disc-shaped aerial objects were occurring almost every night. They would be seen approaching from below the crest of a small sparsely vegetated mountain above the sugar cane field, and would fly about in the sky in all directions in a random fashion. Word had gotten out about the almost nightly visits, and people from all around began coming to the area to witness the phenomenon. One night around 8 p.m. Senior Alvarado and his wife watched many different colored glowing objects of luminous disc form flying shelter over the cornfields. They were of blue, green and amber radiance and were estimated to be 15 to 20 feet in diameter. Ramon counted 25 such craft on this occasion. Some of them approached quite close, and some hovered low over the cane tops and in other places only a couple of feet above the ground. The upper level of these operations was only about 400 to 500 feet above the ground surface. On this particular night the witnesses saw a large number of shiny silver metallic balls, non-luminous but highly reflective, also flying around in the dark sky. Though these spheres were not luminous, they could nevertheless be easily seen in the light of the other disc-shaped UFOs. The balls reflected the many lights of the larger craft flying about. There may have been as many as several dozen such shiny balls, only a few inches to a few feet in diameter, in several sizes. The silver balls kept moving rapidly and did not stop and hover like the luminous disc-shaped larger craft. On another night a few weeks later, Ramon and his wife joined a group of about 80 people who had come to witness the phenomena. It was a Wednesday evening, the objects seemed to be most active in midweek, and they had seen the lights below the top of the large hill. Suddenly they saw three of the blue and green 15 to 20 foot diameter glowing disc-shaped flying objects about 400 to 500 meters to the north of their position. The objects were situated, one over the river to the north near the left road, another to the right of dead center, between the two roads, and a third over the cornfield across the road to the right. As one of the witnesses started down the road to the left with a jeep, to get closer, the one to the far right began to approach up the right road. Alvarado and his wife were standing to the right and the light came slowly toward them. Suddenly a ball of white light about 1 meter in diameter burst into view in front of them and began to fly a tight vertical circle about 12 to 15 meters in diameter only a few feet away. Mrs. Alvarado fainted from fright. Then a much larger round glow of light came on in the distance, across the river towards the hill. It must have been huge, because all of the disc-shaped craft and the white ball of light raced toward it and went inside, and the whole thing rose and flew away as one object. Before they departed, however, the disc-shaped luminous craft on the right that was approaching up the road stopped, and an array of horizontal light beams of several colors including blue, green, violet, amber and orange came on top of the object and radiated out horizontally. Then they began to rotate like helicopter blades, in a counterclockwise direction. These light beams blinked out before this object went toward the larger light in the distance and went into it. There was a principal witness in that vicinity whom these alien visitors picked up and contacted directly. They addressed the contactee in his native Spanish, but they conversed among themselves in another language. When he asked what language it was, they called it Urdim. They said it was a Proto-Sumerian tongue used long ago on Earth by their predecessors here, and that most other languages used on Earth today were derived from it. They said that their ancestors came from what we call the Pleiades. The space being said that they lived lifespans of 1,000 to 1,200 years of our time in a single physical embodiment. They said that they live simultaneously in the three dimensions we normally think of, plus a fourth dimension we know very little about at the present time. They said that the laws of the fourth dimension are entirely different, and that the speed of light in our dimension does not apply in the physics there. They said that they simply shift all matter up to the fourth dimensional state and the laws of time and space change. They have offered scores of detailed descriptions on very scientific subjects, including other dimensions and other beings. Senior Alvarado estimated the contact notes and dialogue he has seen amounted to several hundreds of pages. These Pleiadians, like those visiting Switzerland, also described to other planets in our solar system no familiar to us today. They called one of them Nemus and the other Sirius. These are our spellings from the phonetics used. They say that these planets will be found in orbits between what we call Neptune and Pluto. The visitors to Switzerland said they were both beyond the orbit of Pluto. The visitors to Akka said one was side and one outside the orbit of Pluto. We are unable to account for these disparities. However, the fact that all spoke of only two may be significant. They all mentioned undiscovered moons for the sub-suns Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune, and they have now been proved to be correct in 3 out of 4 and one still to be surveyed by close observation. They all said that there were many inhabited planets in the vast Pleiades systems. They were all aware of other human and non-human visitors to our planet at this time, and each was in active contact with some of those others. A friend of one of the sugar farmers, Senior Gila, Arturus of Hacienda Las Cruces, near Ciudad del Tocay, successfully photographed one of the larger ships visiting this locality. It is seen as a large lens-shaped circular craft with a wide low-profile transparent translucent dome on top. It occasionally radiates light from the rim, and some of this light is seen in the photograph. The skin surface of the craft seems to be matte gray in color and has a brushed metal finish. Two craft was an estimated 400 meters away when the picture was made. They all operated, used or shared bases of limited accessibility in high mountain peaks and in equally inaccessible under ocean locations. Conclusions: having spent 8 years on this case, 7 trips to Switzerland and 81 days on site, interviewing 29 eyewitnesses, 5 photographers, 4 recorders of the spacecraft sounds, and dozens of observers, I feel that I am as qualified as anybody in these United States to draw some conclusions from what I have learned. Somebody not of this earth is indeed visiting Switzerland, and those extraterrestrials were contacting Eduard Billimir living in Hinterskb Midruti. The possibility that Eduard Mir alone, or even with confederates, could have hoaxed all the phenomena we have seen and faked the hundreds of excellent photos of the spacecraft, UFO photographs of every kind and style we have known, landing tracks of several different kinds, recorded the highly peculiar sounds of the alien ships, and the other evidence we have examined and tested to our satisfaction, is as unbelievable as the basic premise of visitation by extraterrestrial human beings itself, perhaps even more so. Mir is handicapped both physically and materially in such a way that for him to carry this out alone would be patently impossible. He could have had confederates and financing sufficient to pull off some of the events, but it would have required a great deal more than that to stage some of the other phenomena observed and recorded. Yet, in all this time, we have found no evidence of collaborators or financiers of any kind anywhere. Mir has certainly made no money on this, his fame is not positive, and he has survived more than a dozen attempts on his life because of what he says is happening to him, not an enviable position at all, and certainly not one anybody would seek and then retain. The results of our testing of the evidence, though not conclusively in the affirmative, have not been conclusively negative either. We have found no evidence of deliberate deception or fraud on the part of Mir or any of those friends and associates around him there in Switzerland. We do not demand, nor do we seek to persuade, anybody to accept our views on this case, nor does Eduard Mir. He has his truths and we have ours, and we are satisfied with our positions regardless of that of anybody else. We know that we have been followed and used by one intelligence group after another in our investigations of this case, and so has Mir. Imagine, then, our surprise to just recently hear from one of those spooks, now retired, who has contacted us and offered some information answering a lot of our questions in the past. I have decided to remove the writer's name and address and publish a reduced Xerox copy of that letter here for you to see for yourself. This is obviously a man on the go, used to dictating his letters to somebody else to finish up and put in proper form, a man used to thinking faster than he writes, who gets ahead of himself when forced to slow down to writing speed and makes simple mistakes in form and use. The message, however, is clearly there to read and interpret as you like. I have added a number of appendices exhibiting significant data to this report. This is the letter from our friendly spook that was received at Munns Park, Arizona, in early February 1989. Letter from a security agent: Dear Mr. Stevens, a friend of mine, Tom Farr, dropped off a copy of message from the Pleiades. I found it very interesting. Tom had previously given me another book about Billimir, which was also interesting. The following is information you might find interesting. The American government did what could be called an extensive soft-touch investigation of Billy, when he first attracted public attention to himself, to find out if the contact was in fact for real. The decision was in his favor. It was extensive investigation, because of the unusual features in Billy's case. Billy, as an individual, and a citizen of another country, had an American intelligence gathering organization look him over from asshole to appetite. He passed the inspection rather well, but has not gone off the deep end, as predicted by the personality profile done on him. It of course goes without saying that he had the intelligence gathering community of his own country look him over. The American investigation was of a light touch vanity, meaning use no force, make no scars, and leave no traces of the investigation. Which is to say, play tourist, pack a camera, and take a lot of pictures, tell a lot of lies, and ask a lot of questions. Host countries' intelligence systems get pissed if they catch you screwing off on their turf. So do not accuse us of any break-ins, and that type of thing, because it happened back in the days when Billy was in fact liberal with what he gave away. Your book indicates that he has upgraded his record-keeping since the early days. In the other book on Billy, there was a big deal about the films, and having them tested. In one specific incident, the film tested was believed to be a copy, and not the original negative as Billy thought. Sorry about that. The way we got copies of Billy's pictures was by paying off the man who handled the film processing for Billy. The man simply ordered a second set of pictures for us, and a second copy of the negatives. At an attractive profit, and the man often had copies made for himself. In a couple of cases we took the original copy of the negative, for the type of lab checks that you wanted to make. We also sent some garbage film through to the same processing company by the same store, under Billy's name, to keep the boys doing the film processing honest. We did establish that there was a little hanky-panky going on at the processing plant, and or in the mail someplace. Someone else was getting off with the first copy of the negatives most of the time. Several times, according to the experts, our copy of the negative would be about the fifth one. All intelligence communities are well aware that vast volumes of bullshit comes and goes in the UFO contactee game, as part of turf, but pictures make strong evidence, which is almost impossible to fake. Because pictures are the quickest way to find who in fact is telling the truth, they often get stolen. Or, why screw around with the bullshit, when the proof is in the film? The intelligence gathering people are also aware of how to intercept mail, and bribe store owners. When the bribe was set up, we did not know how agreeable Billy was going to be about passing out samples. In the book you touched on one of the most important of all things about UFOs, and may not have realized the true importance, to the history of UFOs, in what you said. Page 219, the visitor anticipated ... and they immediately associated them with the Antichrist of Christian literature and wanted nothing more to do with the situation. The problem that Billy had with Carlved of Wiesbaden is the key to understanding most of the American government and Western Europe government's approach to UFOs. In 1945, when it was first proven that UFOs were real from space, operated by intelligent being, most of whom were human in form, the American government did a soft touch check to see what the great unwashed public would say, and how the public would respond to UFOs, and space people, if the president informed the public over national radio. The results of the investigation would truly fracture thinking man's balls. The public's response was all bad. 97% of the public took one of two approaches. Shot first and ask questions later. Or call the UFOs agents of the devil, the prince of the power of the air, the Antichrist, and set up an even worse situation, where UFOs would become a real negative religious issue. What was surprising was the response of the religious leadership, which was by far worse than the general public's response. It could only be called grim news. The science community showed no leadership at all. Just a super case of stupidity and prejudice. As you might guess, the original investigations are by military men, under orders from General Marshall, under the direction of the president. And if you know your military men, finding one who wants to get into a fight with the preachers over what is or is not the Antichrist, when neither the military man nor the preacher know a hell of a lot of factual information. about either the Antichrist or the UFOs would be a lot like sending a blind person out to spot UFOs. Just as soon as the blind man spots the first UFO, the military will get into the fight with the preachers over the Antichrist. To say that the military seriously avoided the potential conflict with the religious community would be an understatement. To say that the military community successfully avoided a fight with the religious community over UFOs would be an accurate observation. To say that the military was real damned sneaky about how they informed the public about UFOs would also be an accurate observation. The military mind will draw conclusions that the religious mind will not. The military mind quickly figured out that if the UFOs wanted to take over the world, they had the speed, science, and firepower to do so. Hence, the military concluded UFOs were working by other rules. The general nature of the rules the individuals in the UFOs would be working under could be projected. Based on previous contact records, however skimpy the records. In other words, the military figured it was a safe assumption that the UFOs would not radically change their actions in modern times, but would stick with the casual and mis system of the past. The military mind drew one conclusion. The single most important thing to do in the situation it was in, namely sitting on some hot, highly controversial information, was to keep the general public from a bad response by controlling the public's response to UFOs. In other words, keep the damned religious mentality out of the issues involved, as long as possible. But, do not ever say that the military never did anything about informing the public about the existence of UFOs. That will mean you have not figured out the methods used by the government to spread the word about UFOs. You might say the military took the Bible's advice about not to let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. The military pulled the very same trick that Moses pulled when he did not like the attitude of his troops after crossing the Red Sea. He took the time to grow a new batch troops, whose response and thinking was more to his liking. And that is what the military did about UFOs. The military also found a problem as bad, or worse, than the religious mind. Have you have ever noticed, scientists are about as bad as the preachers when it comes to UFOs? Especially in the old days. What you missed is the little detail that scientists of the old pre-UFO school got their basic concept of the universe from an insane preacher. A Catholic pope. That basic concept is the idea that man is alone in the universe, and the only intelligent life in the universe. Going into the Dark Ages, all societies leaving records, in any amount, left some kind of UFO record. Those that left verbal histories left verbal records of UFOs. In effect, it was known prior to the Dark Ages that man was not alone in the universe, that other intelligent beings were out there screwing around. Even the damned cave and rock drawings show UFO activity. The Greeks and the Romans also knew that the world was round. The Greeks had even tried to measure the size of the earth using wells and sunlight. The insane Catholic Pope decided that he was the most important thing in the universe, and that the universe revolved around him. The basic idea that the world was flat was imposed upon the world by an insane Pope, which in effect made the earth the center of the universe. That Pope also expanded on the powers of the Pope, in effect saying that he was not only at the center of the universe, he was all that was good, smart, and holy at the center of the universe. That Pope also pitched the idea that man was alone in the universe. That of course left the Pope the smartest man in the universe. When the science-religion fight of the early science days started, science in general won out. The one idea that the scientists took from an insane Pope, which they loved as an idea, and used as their very own idea, was the idea that man is alone in the universe. The idea that man is alone in the universe, if valid, would then make scientists the smartest and best educated beings in the universe. The science community's response to the coming of UFOs, and the possible drop in status from the smartest thing in the universe, was somewhat worse than the religious community's response to UFOs. UFOs rather obviously put the modern scientist in the position of being a backward person in knowledge, on a backward world. And farther insulted the scientist by not bothering to make any contact with him. Few, if any, of the scientists involved gave up their status as the smartest and best educated beings in the universe willing. Most of the older ones died with that idea in their head. The idea man was the only intelligent life in the universe. The existence of UFOs truly lowers the status of the religious and scientific leaders of the world. They resisted such a lowering in their status, particularly the scientist. And here I should clear something up. Mention the word intelligence gathering community, and the most people go into some kind of body training shock, and think they have gone back to messing their pants, and are about to be caught at it. Doing what is called spying on people is an expensive and time-consuming operation, generally involving a lot of people. It is surprising how many people think that they have some kind of secret that makes them worth spying on. Casual surveillance, or simple information gathering, can be done much cheaper. The total amount of information needed to make a high degree of accuracy decision about someone like Billy is in fact not as much as a person would imagine. In effect, in the early days, if you showed up at Billy's place, knowing enough about good manners to bring as much food as you eat, wash as many dishes as you get dirty, and just help around the house or yard a bit, it was possible to get all the UFO information desired from Billy and be treated as a respected guest. Looking into Billy with a professional eye will quickly show that there are a couple of things which are not totally normal for this type of contact. The screwball hours and the many changes in location make it somewhat different from most contacts, which generally proceed on a casual but regular basis, with some consideration for the contactee. Billy probably holds the record for more bad weather contacts than anyone else. His case has some screwball features, but it had some very good pictures. In a shared UFO information pool with other countries, including India, it was noticed that Billy got his contacts whenever a woman the Indians were watching was missing. It was speculated that Bill's female contact could have been one of two women that the India authorities were watching. One was a tall dark-haired woman with a very fair complexion who, according to what the Indians could find out, had been working an area for about 200 years. The other woman was a short, somewhat dumpy blonde, with kind of a flat face. Every time the dumpy blonde left India, Billy had a contact. Because the Indian surveillance was of the soft touch type, and far from complete, nothing was ever established. But, for a period of about 2 or 3 years, there was a one-to-one relationship between the blonde leaving India and Billy having a contact. And there is something else you might figure out, or work on. It is Billy stumbling onto military men looking at his contact sites. For all their science, the clowns in the UFO do not always work out everything to perfection. As a military officer, you are exposed to a few classes in physics. As the book says about the rocks and the gold, the physics are the same, this world, or some other. That means that what is known about physics here will also apply up there. The UFO has a power source, which is obviously related to gravity and electromagnetic properties of physics. That is all packed into a small space and affects the world around it. Add to that some cloaking device and a few stray things, and you have a ship which will give off a few things in the line of radiation. If the dogs can spot the UFOs, then use dogs, which we did around some military and science bases in the early days. If the TV flutters when one comes by, start from there for making a detection device. It logically follows that about the time that the governments got into the business of knowing about UFOs, they also got into learning how to detect the things when they flew by. And it was a dog whose action told us that flying saucer had clocking devices. It did not turn out to be all that hard to make a detection device. The Swiss government has such devices and obviously uses them. The last time I had anything to do with such devices, which was a long time ago, and the devices were physically very large because their radios had vacuum tubes, they could be rigged to do several different things, and the American government was screwing with a model that would give the general direction the UFO was traveling. By now they could be the size of a pack of smokes, and given direction along with the make and model of the UFO. Me in the late 50s, we could define between about four types of UFOs based on how they affected our devices.